Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. and we stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio show's page is where we archive the programs, and we certainly encourage you to check out not only our website, which basically contains the interviews and, you know, some basic information about who and what we're all about. Go to the missions page as well. If you'd like to support our efforts, hey, we're not a nonprofit, but we certainly can use all the help we can get. And we're gratefully, greatly appreciative of any support that you can give us, financially or otherwise, for that matter. So we are here for you and you for us. And, hey, it all works together. Today, I think, is going to be a lot of fun, especially for kids, as well as kids at heart. I want you to listen to something. Deep down inside you live two special friends, always together. Their love never ends. One is a little girl, the other a boy. Let me introduce you to Giggles and Joy. Sometimes you laugh from a tickle or stroke, or a fart sound sneaks out when you hear a good joke. Out jumps a feeling, keen to burst free. That's Giggles and Joy, making you happy, you see. And yet there are times when you feel rather sad, or something goes wrong that makes you quite mad. On days when you're like this, when your nerves start to fray, Giggles and Joy seem a long way away. But like most friends we have, we need to be asked to come out and play or to help with a task. So don't forget, they're right there inside. Bring them out in the open. Let them come for a ride. Remember this now as you drift off to sleep, that Giggles and Joy are best friends to keep. They love being with you. They're the easiest way to feel happy and grateful for this perfect day. And that is from Giggles and Joy. It is not only a single book on spiritual life lessons for kids, but it is also a series. And You Are Loved and Being You is also a second and third book. And my guest is the author, along with two other beautiful women who are unfortunately not joining us today, but we are certainly grateful to Ariane de I'm going to hopefully get this correct, because I thought about it as Bon Voyage. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Bon Voisin?
Bon Voisin.
Bon Voisin. Ariane, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It is a pleasure, and I have to say that when I found out about you and what you are all about and the work that you're doing through these particular works, these beautiful books, which, by the way, as soon as we're done with this interview, I'm going to be sending these off to my parents, who are, they basically are caring for their great grandchildren, grandson and granddaughter, my great grand niece and nephew, I guess.
Wow.
And I'm going to pass these on to them because I know that my my niece on my sister, one of my sister's niece, who is the mother of these two children, she's definitely along these lines. And I know she'll love to share these stories with them. So I'll pass these on to them.
Aww.
But one of the things that is so critical, and by the way, I have two other pieces we're going to play throughout the program here.
I have to say, Richard, first of all, I'm incredibly touched that you would put that poem to music. No one's ever done that. I mean, if you could do the whole book, it really was very powerful. I felt very moved and very touched.
Well, we will talk after the interview about that, because it's something I love to do. It's been a long time since I have actually personally recorded a book. I used to do it all the time with my first wife, who was totally blind, and we would read together, and I would record books like James Redford's Celestine Prophecy and so forth onto cassettes, so that she, in addition to listening to it together, she could listen to it at her leisure as well. And I was a child who listened to talking books and recordings for the blind, because I was totally blind when I was a kid.
Wow. Growing up. I beg your pardon. Not totally. Legally. I could see. But 1996, got a lens implant, and I'm driving now. So wow. I would love to do that because one of the things that I'm finding, and of course the song that resonates in my head, maybe yours as well, is that song, I think it was from the 60s, might have been the 70s, Teach Your Children Well.
Yes.
And there's a proverb, I believe it is, that is a double-edged sword. And it goes like this. Train a child up in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I say a double-edged sword because obviously the significant meaning is train the child up and see what a kind of an adult he or she's going to be.
Yeah.
And then the other edge of that sword, if you will, is take a look at the adults that are walking around today, and you can see how they were trained up,
yeah,
and where, why they are the way they are.
Yeah.
And these three books in particular, Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids. You also had an illustrator as well as a co-author. Is it Carly?
Carly.
Yeah. Carly.
Carly was my co-author. Well, you know, I actually was just living in South Africa for the last 5 years. My husband's from there. I have my son there. And I think being around children and being around children over there, I just noticed how much we need to boost their spirit and that the world doesn't really do that. The world tries to focus on their mind and educating children above the neck. And I was like, we really need to focus on the heart and the spirit. And the amazing thing with Carly is she has a real knack for making things rhyme. Mm-hmm. Like I had ideas, I had themes, I was very in touch with the content, but she was incredible at finding words that rhymed. And Ellie, who's the illustrator, she could just take a poem and take a theme, you know, whether it's having a bad day or how do you explain change to a young child. And we would kind of just play around with, you know, should this be animals? Should this be aliens? Should this be under the water? Should this be grown-ups? And the books have a sort of this beautiful imagery that allows children to kind of get into their own spiritual world while, you know, a grown-up is either reading it to them or they're listening to it, as you've shown us earlier.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too. And by the way, I should mention Carly Sutcliffe is her last name and Ellie Cross, your illustrator. And these are, obviously, most children's books are usually a little oversized, which is very nice. The illustrations, nice, large and bright. I love them because I grew up watching Warner Brothers cartoons, and which is the reason why I prefer, sorry, folks, Windows PCs over Apple, because Apple's colors are all washed out, at least all of the Apple products I've ever seen. So I prefer Windows. So I don't know. Maybe there should be a study done. Did you watch Warner Brothers cartoons as a child? And what kind of PC do you have? What kind of computer? But they just jump out off the page, and that's what you want with illustrations. And then, of course, the words, if the kids can read, terrific. But what's even more powerful that I have found, and I'm very much into Audible books, obviously, because of my personal background, is the impact that those spoken words can elicit in a child coming from a parent or a grandparent or another older sibling who's reading to them, maybe at bedtime or what have you.
Absolutely. And what's amazing is, you know, a lot of things inspired these books, but one of the things that really inspired it is I read a book by a woman called Lisa Miller, and she is PhD scientist, was not very spiritual, and she wrote a book called The Spiritual Child, and she did the longest study of the impact of children who were raised with some spiritual path and children who were raised with no spiritual path. So she followed children from birth to, I think it was about 25 years old. And what she saw was children who had had any opening to any form of spiritual life, whether it was through a grandparent, through a parent, through a sibling, through seeing, you know, compassion, generosity, angels, really anything, were more likely to have better self-esteem, be off drugs, be, you know, have no sort of negative tendencies, suicidal thoughts. And to me, I thought, this is incredible. Like, this should be all over the news, that teaching children that they have a spiritual nature, that they are connected to something greater, that they have sort of this inner world and this inner connection. And, you know, and I remember reading the end of the book and thinking, you know, if I can have my own small little contribution to parents, to grandparents, to teachers who really are trying their best. And I think we all sort of default to the way we were parented, and that programming is what we sort of share with our children. So, you know, the books were really a hope to sort of add to that treasure chest of how do you bring up kids with a spiritual, you know, heart? How do you remind them? I don't even think you need to teach them. I just think you need to keep it alive. But especially for parents, you know, who, how do you teach a child, you know, to tell the truth? How do you teach them intuition? How do you teach them about grown-ups? How do you teach them to be, that it's okay to be sad or it's okay to be mad? And I wanted to give some wisdom. And so, yeah, that's what we created, but in a really fun way. There's nothing serious about them.
No. And I love how it's put together. And again, I would assume that these are just the first three books.
Yeah.
There are more coming.
I can't wait to put out the rest, actually, because since we published them in the last 6 months, and since then, like, I've had parents request, you know, please, can you do a poem about materialism and the fact that, you know, it's not what the world is about, because so many kids, they just want more. They want more toys or they want more electronics.
Yeah.
So just one which isn't about generosity, but which is about teaching them what's the other side of this materialistic world. You know, I wanted to do one about letting go, and that we never really teach children to let go, and that things are in flow. It's the circle of life. Mm-hmm. You know, one about self-compassion, you know, or self-forgiveness. We always teach kids to say, I'm sorry, and to, you know, forgive.
Yeah.
But we never teach them to say, you know, it's okay, sweetie. I made a mistake, like, personally. And I find even myself as a grown-up, I still struggle with the self-forgiveness and the self-compassion and the not beating myself up. I'm pretty good at saying sorry. I'm pretty good at apologizing. I'm pretty good at telling the truth. But when it's turned towards self, you know, I look at with the four-year-old that I have, I mean, one of the things I really want to give him is a kind mind, because so much starts with what they tell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am telling him is really what he is translating as his own inner environment and inner voice. But I cannot teach him to have a kind mind if he sees or notices or even just energetically feels that I'm also beating myself up. So the biggest lesson I've found is I've had to really clear up my own stuff so that it's not, you know, said or even shared or noticed by the child. So the raising conscious kids is really, the beginning is how do you become a conscious parent or adult or grandparent or great-grandparent so that you can sort of share something different with your child.
Yeah. You know, I find it interesting that there have been only a few adults that I am aware of who, during their tenure at their particular job, I'll call it, they made a mistake, okay? They really made a mistake, and they were called on it, and they owned up to it. They said, yes, I screwed up. I made this mistake, and I'm sorry, and so forth. And I've noticed that then when you have the others, that there are even more, who make a mistake, they're called on it, and they will deny it. And there are more of those than the former. And what I have noticed, and why the larger number doesn't seem to get the message from the smaller number, is when they owned up to it, and they said, yes, I screwed up, I made this mistake, the public and the news doesn't care anymore.
Yeah.
But when you deny it, oh my God, they're like jackals, and they're going to go after every piece of flesh they can to tear this person apart, and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, the message that young kids get from that is, diving onto what you were just talking about self-forgiveness, is, can't do it. I got to tear myself up.
Yep. And, you know, to me, it brings up two things, which is that we do not allow grown-ups to be human, mm-hmm. you know, and we certainly don't allow our children to be human.
Oh.
And teaching what I call humanity skills, right? You can call them spiritual skills, but it's like, how do you be and do this human thing, right? And it's not what's in first place, you know? And the irony, Richard, is most parents I've ever met and spoken to all around the world, all they say is, I just want my kids to be happy. And they, you know, I often kind of go, well, do you really? Is that really what's in first place?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at what the parenting is, and I look at the education, and I look at the schooling, and I go, no, it isn't. Performance is in first place. Achievement, comparison, competition, getting ahead, fitting in, being in the mass consciousness, doing what's expected of a girl or a boy. I go, that I don't see any happiness in first place there. And it's sad because, you know, the truth is the parents aren't happy either. All of that is in first place for the parents too. And I'm completely guilty. I grew up in a family that put performance, achievement, comparison, competition in first place. And I was very highly educated above the neck. And, you know, it took me a long time to sort of get back in touch with the fact that I had this inner life and that I could choose things to be happy. And, you know, my sharing with these, the Giggles and Joy books, is just to hope that parents realize that we need to do something a bit different, and that so many of our kids and our teenagers aren't very happy and they're not doing that well, and that there are ways to help them. You know, you talk about asking grown-ups to tell the truth and to say, I admit it. I mean, I'm so aware of the fact that when my son Everest, you know, when I ask him something, so I'll give you an example. Let's say he's taken, you know, two cookies, and I know he's taken two cookies. And so I say to him, I say, Everest, have you taken another cookie? And he says, yes. So I acknowledge him for telling the truth. So I say, that's so great you told me the truth. Thank you. I asked you not to do it. Please next time don't do it. Now, the average person would say, Everest, you took a second cookie. Go to your room. And so what does that child learn? If I tell the truth, there's pain and I'm going to get punished.
Yeah.
And that lesson gets imprinted the first time you make your child wrong for telling the truth.
Yeah.
And we're so guilty of it. And it's we don't even realize. So, you know, did you hit your brother? No, I didn't. Did you hit your brother? Yes, I did. Go to your room. You know, so what are they learning? I can't tell the truth. And the thing is, you can't tell the truth to yourself either later on. And so it really starts very young. I mean, I've done so much research on this. There's an amazing PhD called Bruce Lipton.
Yes.
And he wrote some amazing books. And he says, you know, by age six, children have made conclusions, perceptions about themselves, about other people, about women, about boys, about money, about work, by age six. So we really need to be very responsible about what we're saying, not saying, especially about what we're not saying.
Yeah, and you might put that another way, that by age six, they're done. I mean, they're finished as far as that which is going to make up their personality for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It's like
clay. You know, it's like we're given this clay and we've got to mold it.
Yeah.
And
you've got 6 years.
It does
you've,
harden. And
yeah.
that's your child's heart.
And you've only got 6 years to do it in, kids, folks.
Yeah. Which is why this book series, you know, a lot of people say, well, what age is it for? And I say, listen, it's from birth to age seven or eight, because, you know, my personal belief is that even the babies that are coming in, their souls are very wise. There's a listening and a hearing that's different. They can, you know, be inspired by the pictures. So I've been giving them a lot to people who have brand new little ones too.
Mm. Well, you know what? To that end, I want to share with you another little surprise here. That I have put together, and I hope you enjoy it. I want to remind our listeners before we listen to this, Ariane de Bonvoisin, de Bonvoisin.
Right.
By the way, one of the things that I learned, and I don't know if it was from my parents or who it was from, it is so important to learn how to pronounce someone's given name. It's such, to me, it is the height of disrespect. not to learn that. And I apologize for stumbling
forgiven.
Through it. And I appreciate that. But I want to let our listeners know, Giggles and Joy is the series. How many books do you expect for that? Right now, there are three, Being You, You Are Loved, and Giggles and Joy, Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids. Are you expecting 2, 3, 4 more? So make it 5, 6, 7 books?
I'd like to put out one a year and just see how far we get.
Just keep it going.
Yeah, keep it going. And, you know, if parents or any listeners want to email us and sort of say, you know, please do a poem about, you know, siblings or whatever it is that you're dealing with. Sometimes it's easier to share a message through a poem or through, you know, something in a book than it is for the parents to do it directly.
Mm. Well, here's a little piece that I put together, and I hope that you folks like it, is from the series Giggles and Joy. Stay with us here. Beautiful you. Look in the mirror. What do you see? A beautiful person, if you ask me. You're sweet and so funny. You're clever and kind. But what do you think? What goes on in your mind? Do you see all the bits that make you unique? Your eyes, hair, and ears. Even the size of your feet. We all have these things. We'd look funny if not. But everyone's different with whatever they've got. Your fingers are useful. They look like long toes. You can breathe through your mouth and also your nose. Your hair keeps your head warm. Your mouth likes to smile. Your knees get quite grubby when you play for a while. But remember one thing above all that you see. It's not what you look like that's beautiful to me. It's the person you are beneath your soft, silky skin. It's the kindness you show, not if you're fat or you're thin. Just look in the mirror and see what I see. The beauty of the world shining back at me. You're amazing and perfect, totally complete. You're incredibly special from your head to your feet. So tell yourself daily, I love who I am. My body goes together like eggs, chips, and ham. God made you perfect and everyone too. Just look at yourself and believe that it's true.
The gift you are, like the very first breath of springtime. The gift you are, all the joy that love can bring. The gift you are, all of our dreams come true. Yes, they do. The gift you are, the gift of you.
And there you go.
Well, that's really beautiful. That's the word. Really beautiful.
I saw that poem in there, and I was going, okay, where is that song? I've got to find that song. I know I've heard it over and over and over again. Where is that? Because it just fits so beautifully with that.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
And even even listening to it, tears come to my eyes.
No, it's incredible. I mean, beauty is, you know, has such power, and we always talk about external beauty.
Yeah.
You know, there will come a time. I mean, my son has no idea if he's beautiful or not beautiful, and at some point the world will decide.
Well,
and he needs to decide that for himself.
I heard a wonderful analogy, it has to do with chocolate cake. Okay. And there's this.
You've got me. I'm
listening. Oh, okay. By the way, speaking of food in particular, in that poem, talks about, you know, eggs, chips, and ham.
Yeah.
Obviously in English.
yes.
But it was making me hungry. Anyway, back to the chocolate cake, which comes after the eggs, chips, and ham. The analogy was this. There's this beautiful chocolate cake, and it's fresh, and it's just ready to be eaten, and it's sitting there on the counter. And several people walk in, and one person says, no, I don't want chocolate cake. Now, the chocolate cake doesn't care. The chocolate cake is chocolate cake. And if you want it, it's there. And if you don't want it, it's not there. Mm-hmm. We are the chocolate cake.
Yep.
And each person that we associate with has the right to decide whether or not they want chocolate cake or they don't want chocolate cake. And maybe they'll want chocolate cake later.
I love that.
Okay. But the chocolate cake has no, stake in this, has no emotional attachment to whether or not the humans, the people, are going to or not going to eat it, have a piece.
It's just personal.
It's nothing personal, exactly. I know that's a hard one for us, but I grew up as a kid being bullied in school. And it's taken a long time. Now, let's go back to what you said earlier, the statistic about human beings, so to speak, personalities formed by the age of six, that clay that you talked about that we have, the as parents, have the 6 years to mold and shape and so forth and help to foster. But that doesn't mean, and I think maybe this is something I have you delve into, that doesn't mean that just because at the age of six, where the clay is now hardened and finished, that we can't change some certain things that may have come up in those first 6 years that are blocking us from achieving our dreams of having fun and playing or whatever the case might be.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I would say was, children, and again, as much as I would say to adults when I coach adults, is the things that determine whether we are happy or sad, whether we suffer and are in pain, or whether we actually, you know, have a beautiful life, is the meaning we attach to things. And children attach meaning to why their parents are arguing, or why their mom didn't come and pick them up, or why their dad didn't put them to sleep. And these are, they're basic things. They don't mean anything to the adult necessarily. But we need to be very conscious of the fact that our children, because they don't know and they don't understand and they don't have that brain circuitry for many years, you can constantly help a child understand something differently. So I say, you know, one of the things I help parents with is to really listen to what their child is saying when their child is describing themselves. So is the child saying, you know, I am scared, I am sad, I am shy, I am, and not to reinforce that, but to acknowledge that it's there and show them the power of that phrase, the I am phrase, right? Because the I am is the identity. It is the brain circuitry. And that's where you have the chance to, you know, add to that, not reinforce the ones that your child is already believing about themselves, but also add to it. And I think it really does start in how the parents view their own child, because we label and we view and we describe our child to our sister or our parents or our friends or the, you know, when we pick up our kid from school, we talk to another parent and we describe our child. Oh, he's the sporty one, or she's the funny one, or no, he's a bit shy. Or, and your children are hearing this every single day. So whether they are six or whether they are 10, you know, the mindfulness for a grown-up is really about the words that they're sharing and energetically the position that you've placed that child in.
Mm. I remember years ago when I was working for a Christian radio station back in Phoenix and hearing all the different messages. And I remember hearing this phrase that this one passage from the New Testament, and it went like this: be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, what is that? What is that perfect? What does that mean? And I started doing some literal research, but also pondering it as well. And I came to this conclusion. The perfect that's referenced there has nothing to do with light and dark, good and evil, good and bad, right or wrong. Be perfect, because even as your Father in heaven, he's neither God is neither right nor wrong, good or bad, light or dark. He just is, right?
Right.
Then that perfection is just to be. Mm. Just be that chocolate cake. Don't be anything other than who you are, as even that song talked about. Be that gift that you are, and the rest will follow. And then, of course, if you have parents who are sort of teaching you, so to speak, right from wrong, or at least teaching you how to treat yourself and others. I've often thought of the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yep.
I've rephrased that. Do unto others as if you were the others. Somebody said to me the other day, though, they said, yeah, the problem with that, though, is that if you do that, there are those who don't treat themselves well at all. And that's the reason why they don't treat other people really well.
Yeah.
So there's a little flaw in my analogy, but nonetheless.
No, I like that. I think, you know, to me, we have a rule here at home where perfect is not a good word. And so we look for making mistakes. When we say grace at the dinner table, you know, we have different questions for every night. But one of the questions is, you know, what went wrong? Or what was not great about today? Or, you know, what mistake did you make? Because the sharing and the valuing and the celebrating of the fact that something didn't happen, you know, you can't overprotect your kids from things not working out or being disappointed or not winning the baseball or, you know, not getting whatever they're supposed to be getting on a test at school. So the permission to not be human is, you know, the permission, excuse me, to not be perfect is such an important value. And I think, you know, the message that you said from the Bible, what I really hear is that, you know, everything is perfect, including the sadness, including being angry, including being upset. You know, we don't let our children have a bad day. We give our kids hell when they're grumpy. But then adults are allowed to be grumpy and have a bad day and be angry with someone on the phone and cry in their bed. But we don't have the same rules for our kids. When our kids wake up and they're grumpy, we make sure to tell them.
Yeah.
No one's telling you that you look terrible and you're grumpy. You know, so there's all is welcome here, right? All is welcome here. You are allowed to be sad in this house. You're allowed to be upset. You're allowed. And, I mean, there's such a relief. I feel like I can take a deep breath even just by saying that, because it was not the way I was brought up. You know, my emotional range was shortened. So if I was too happy, it was stamped out. And if I was too sad or upset or angry, you know, it was also stamped out. And then your emotional range is the range really of how much joy and experience you're going to get out of life. Don't stamp out. There's so many of these poems and the books are about emotions, right? There's one about Bye Bye Bad Day.
Yeah.
Because kids are allowed to have a bad day and you need to help them teach as opposed to hope that they don't have a bad day at school. There's one about being sad and mad, because those are two very valuable emotions and they need to be able to feel them. And also, you know, I ask my son to label what he's feeling. Never assume that, you know, where is that feeling in the body? You know, is it in your stomach? Is it in your throat? Is it like, where is it? What color is it? So I get him to sort of make friends with it. And then my most important tool is to teach children how to breathe, because kids are not breathing anymore. They're in their heads. They're active. They're busy. And, you know this as well as I do, but, you know, when they're breathing, they've got sort of this way of calming themselves down. You know, when I teach kids, I say, you know, your brain needs oxygen. When you're not breathing, your brain's not working well, and it goes all fizzy. You know, so we have this joke where my brain's fizzy. Instead of they've misbehaved or they've thrown a tantrum, it's basically about their brain not getting oxygen. You know, it's the same thing for adults. You're just not breathing. And so teaching a child to breathe and that they have, you know, when something happens here in our house, we do 1, 2, 3, 5, 7 deep breaths. There's no punishment. There's no go to your room. There's breathing. And so there is a permission to just realize that the body needs to just be brought back into balance. But that's a lifelong tool. I mean, I wasn't told to breathe till I was, you know, probably 30. And there's a whole poem about taking a deep breath, you know, which is one of the kids' favorite, because it takes place in a school where everything's going crazy, you know, and kids don't quite know how to be. And so it's one of my favorite, to take a deep breath one.
And then there's another passage. And again, they come back to my mind as we are talking here. Come to me as little children.
Yes.
And what that says to me is, come to me as childlike, not childish, childlike. And adults have a really hard time with being childlike, yeah. Playing, having a great... When was the... I don't know what part of the country you live in now, but I live right here, of course, in Santa Barbara along the beach. I love when I get the chance, and it's been a while, to get out to the beach. My God, I'm 20-minute walk from the beach. How is it that I'm not getting down there and walking in the sand and the surf?
Every day.
Every day. What the heck is my problem? You know? But we don't allow ourselves to do that. Or go to the park and get on a swing, you know, or what have you.
Yeah. You know, I've got, I need to share this with you because I haven't shared it. But yes, I live in New York City and we're having a heat wave and it's 100 degrees. And I picked up my son yesterday. He's at dance camp and he wanted to go to the sprinklers. So there's sprinklers in Central Park by the Natural History Museum. And so we go to the sprinklers. I had his swimsuit, but of course I didn't have my swimsuit, right? I mean, I'm not, you know, I'd say 99.9% of grown-ups in New York City are not going to jump in the sprinklers. And I had a summer dress on and flip-flops. And I watched my son in these sprinklers. He was having way more fun than me because I was sweating. And I thought, why is it that not a single grown-up is walking into these sprinklers? And you know what I did? I walked right in, fully clothed, in my dress. And my son, it's like God had descended from heaven. He was so happy. And we played in these sprinklers for half an hour. I was soaked head to toe. And it's one of my best memories I've had with him. It is irreplaceable. But I really thought, you know, why am I not walking in here? It's not a big deal if my dress gets wet. Like, really?
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I say that just to kind of listen to your intuition. Like, my intuition would be going, come on, Ariane, just get in. Like, just go.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what is blocking, right? And it's these misperceptions and it's these beliefs of like, well, adults do this, children do this. Well, who made up those rules? Right? Mm. Who's having the most fun here?
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Ariane de Bonvoisin, and we're talking about this series that is only just begun, Giggles and Joy. It is a spiritual life lesson for kids, and it's in right now three different books that are available, I'm sure, on Amazon as well as your local bookstore.
Yeah.
Being You, You Are Loved, and Giggles and Joy. And we are going to continue laughing and talking and having a great time and running through the sprinklers here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I really am glad that you've stayed with us here on the program along with Ariane de Bonvoisin, and we're talking about basically having more joy in our lives, but also teaching our children that, hey, it's okay to have some fun. You're a kid, for gosh sakes. I have to say that, you know, when I look back on my childhood, and I have to say my childhood lasted quite a long time, even into my teens, because I was still doing things that I loved to do, and even into my 20s, for that matter, because even after I moved out of my parents' house, one of the things that brought me a great deal of joy, A, was bicycling. And I used to bicycle all over Phoenix. Now, I would never try that in New York City, for starters. I've only been there once in 1993. And my first wife and I, we flew there and we were staying with a friend of mine who worked for one of the big bookstore companies at the time, Walden or B. Dalton, I forget which. And we went to Central Park. I still remember this. And it was actually one of the funniest and scariest moments when we were in New York. We were in Central Park, and there's that fountain.
Yes.
And there's a television series that used to be on years ago called The Odd Couple. And the final scene of credits ended in front of that fountain. And we were standing in front of that fountain, and it just so happened it was 1993. It was also Earth Day, and we looked off to the west from that fountain, and off in the distance were all these people, and they were headed our way. They weren't running, but they were moving pretty quick, and it was the three of us, and we were having a great time, and all of a sudden, we're going, uh-oh, we better hightail it out of here or we're going to get lost in this crowd here. Again, not knowing it was Earth Day. But I used to bicycle everywhere in Phoenix, and people used to say, you're crazy. And then the other thing that I loved to do was put on one of my talking books, listen to a book, and build models. The last one I built was a gift that was given to me on my 21st birthday, and I was still working on it before my first wife and I moved from our trailer to a house. And unfortunately, it was the USS Constitution, and it ended up getting ruined in the move. But nonetheless, I haven't built one since. I really haven't.
Put it on the to-do list.
Absolutely. I have one of these giant portfolio zippered pouches that's got all of my drawing stuff in it. I haven't done that in a long. I mean, actually, I have. I have actually pulled it out and grabbed some of the colored markers, and I've doodled and this and that. But this is to me, it's a lesson that we need to take to heart, that it's okay to take time to do that kind of stuff. It's not taking away from the essential adult stuff. Hell, when I was in my early teens, I used to think how great it was going to be an adult and do all of that stuff. And I've been an adult for a lot longer than I was a teen, and it's had its moments.
Yeah.
But it's really really something. And people such as yourself and the other two women who are involved in this, Carly and Ellie. The three of you have produced a beautiful set for children, but. And you say from whatever it was, 6 months to 8 years or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
I just don't think that I think that adults would get a lot out of this too. I think that it would bring back a lot of the good memories, a lot of the good stuff that maybe they have forgotten over the years that they need to be reminded of.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was chatting to a friend who's a mother last night, and, you know, she was telling me how she had a difficult relationship with both her parents, and that her parents had been very generous in terms of education and ballet and piano and, you know, everything that they thought she needed to be a wonderful, fully functioning woman that she is today. And she described the phrase, you know, milk and honey, which I think is also in the Bible. And she said, you know, my parents gave me the milk. They gave me the things that were essential and responsible, but she never got the honey. And the anger, you know, which unfortunately a lot of grown-ups have towards at least one parent, is usually because there's a missing of an expectation that you so desperately wanted in your childhood. And a lot of it is to do with just the parent being present, you know, present in the sprinklers, present to go play soccer, present to read one more book, you know, present to laugh, present to not be serious, present to... And, you know, a lot of parents are like, oh, I just don't have time. And, you know, I often push them on this, you know, as a coach, I've got to sort of question the excuses because some people really get their excuse and some people get a different kind of life. And you need to say, am I going to stay with the excuse of I don't have time? Mm. Like, how much time do you have to check your phone? How much time did you check Facebook? How much time did you, you know, spend eating today?
Yeah.
Right? When I teach adults how to meditate and breathe, they're like, oh, I don't have time. And I say, you know what? You breathe and meditate before you have a meal, then you'll find the time. But if you have time to eat three times a day and snack twice a day, you also have time. And do you see what it's just kind of pushing people's very solidified beliefs and excuses about why something isn't changing. Because ultimately it does come back to the adult looking at their lives differently and what they want to communicate with their children. Do you want your children to think that work is all they do when they're grown up and it's boring and they hate and they're going to hate their job?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of children are growing up with that as an example in the house.
You know, yeah, exactly. It's
and then you get the millennials who are like, but Dad, you hate your job. I don't want to go do that. And then they don't want to work.
Well, I was trained up as a child by my father with some wonderful life lessons, more in phrases than anything else. Some of my favorites are, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation because nobody gets out of this world alive.
Yeah.
Okay. So enjoy your life, enjoy your life. But one of the things tied off to what you're talking about had to do with work. My father told me, I don't know if it was when I was graduated from high school or taking my hiatus for 6 months. And he said, make sure that you get into a job that you love to do and don't get stuck like me. Now, my father didn't really get stuck. Now, maybe initially he did, but in the 70s, and I was in my teens at the time, my dad went back to college and he got his computer programming education. And this was back with punch cards and fanfold paper, okay, and computers that took up the size of a room, right? And he continued to work and he continued to do some things until his retirement. Now he's retired and reminds me constantly I remember when my second wife and I, and my present wife is my second wife, we were over there visiting. We were still living in Phoenix and we would go over there on Sundays to sit and chat for a couple of hours about all kinds of great stuff. I mean, oh, it was incredible. They're more like friends to me than they are parents. And I'd say, look at my watch. My dad, hey, you know, we got to go. We've got animals we got to feed and we got to get ready to go to work tomorrow. My dad would look at his watch as, I don't. I'm retired. Thanks, Dad. And of course,
he had a special dad.
And I have to tell you that I tell people when they ask me about my retirement, and my mother did the other day, specifically about my retirement plan. I says, I don't have one, Mom. I'm sorry. And I've joked with people, but actually I'm serious that they're going to have to peel my cold dead carcass off of the console. hopefully I will, you know, end my life. My life will come to an end. I won't end it. It will come to an end while working, and I'll do my final broadcast, and then I will be off into the next world. Mm. But
how great is it that you found your love, you know? Yeah. And I don't know how you would teach that to young children. Yeah.
It just happened.
But to me, you also weren't expected to do the accounting, medical, lawyer, banker. You know, I was on that path. Like, that's what my father wanted me to do. And I went the safe route because I wanted his approval. And so I started off studying what he wanted me to study, economics, accounting, finance, which is so not me. Mm. And then I went into a big proper job, and then I went to business school because you sort of follow, you know, children, all they want is their parents' love. And underneath love, it's approval, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, all we ever wanted was our mom and dad to love us. And so if love was based on me studying something, I was going to go study it, right? If love was based on me getting A pluses, that's what I did. But the truth is, the love never really came the way I wanted it, because sometimes parents aren't capable of sharing that or showing that in the way that the child actually needs and wants. You know, my father definitely thought that he was loving me by giving me a fantastic education. And so there's an opportunity for people to drop the expectations that we put on our child, that they're going to have this job, they're going to get married, they're going to have these children, they're going to live close to you, they're going to go to college. Like, could you, what would happen if you didn't have those expectations? They're not going to play the violin. They're not going to go to college. They're not going to marry the person you want. You know, that is really scary for people. And yet the reality is, it's very likely that either that will happen or that is the source of your children's happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, it's been extraordinary for me. And I have been involved with the subject primary, you know, on the one hand of self-help and going through all of those phases in my 20s and 30s. And even into my 40s, but more on a spiritual, metaphysical path. And when I start to see some of these movies, television shows, or even real-life dramas around Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner, and, you know, that whole dysfunctional family thing that they make fun of in the movies and what have you.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. I didn't have Norman Rockwell-type settings, but I didn't have that kind of stuff. I mean, we had 8 people living in a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, couldn't have been more than 1,200 square feet or maybe slightly larger than that home. And we were packed in there pretty good, but, you know, somehow, some way, we didn't kill anybody off to make more room.
Yeah.
We got along for the most part. Yes, my brother and I, we had fights throughout our childhood and adolescence. But we also, as we grew older, into our late teens, we had our own friends in high school. He went off and did things with his friends, a friend of his, Charles. And I had my friends and a group that I associated with. And I wasn't necessarily in the in crowd. My brother just somehow managed to, just his person, whatever. My sisters, I'm very close to one of my older sisters, and the relationships have gotten better and better. And that's not to say that they were bad to begin with.
Yeah.
It's just they were good where they were, but now they're even better than they were.
Yeah. And to me, you bring up a good point, which is, you know, relationships are going to change.
Yeah.
That there are times where they're going to be great. There are times where they're going to be not so. And again, going back to the whole, all of that is acceptable. You know,
yeah.
You don't have to be super close to your siblings. You know, there's this pressure of, you know, you must. I mean, plenty of people are closest to a friend than they are to a sibling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the culture doesn't really allow that to happen. But I think the other thing I wanted to say that you bring up in terms of just listening to how your childhood was that, you know, people really need to also focus on what's really good. What's working? Because I think as parents, we beat ourselves up. You know, what's missing? What am I not doing? I forgot this. I didn't do this. I haven't taught my kid a musical instrument. He's not bilingual. You know, and we're so focused on what's not working, what's missing, what have I not done? And of course, we end up feeling depleted and exhausted, right, which is the middle name of every parent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think getting through that is so much about, you know, what's great? What did I do that was fantastic today? What can I see in my son that's just so beautiful, you know, that I contributed to? I put dinner on the table. I picked him up. Just the basics. We need to kind of, this goes back to having a kind mind for parents and not focusing on, well, what was not, I'm sure you could tell me things that weren't great about your childhood, but the memories of what's good and what's wonderful and what's working, and that's what needs to be flowered, you know, that's what needs to be juiced up.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This has, again, been an extraordinary a program that we've been on, talking about some incredible things, Ariane, and it's we as adults, you and I, I'm sure, we get ourselves sort of trapped or locked into a lot of what's going on in the world today, and we try to try to formulate, this person, if they would just do this or they would just do that, things would be so much better and so forth, and that person should be taken out of there, and on, and we should be kinder to these people, and on and on and on, and we just go into that adult mind. I think the term is monkey mind.
Yeah.
And we get trapped in that. And I'm a firm believer. I'm sure you are too. In addition to what you've already said about education from the neck up as opposed to from the neck down, I'm a firm believer, as this program promotes, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true, that without a good education, yes, from the neck up, they are not going to know that they have other choices. And you, in your family, in the way you're raising your children, giving them permission to emote in wherever they happen to be at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. That is giving them choices. Yeah. Whereas stereotypically, men don't cry. No. And if I get depressed, I'll just go over here in a corner. And I remember what my very first general manager, Gene Joynes, taught me whenever there was a problem at the radio station. This was a radio reading service for the blind and visually impaired I was working at. And she said, if you ever feel like panicking during a situation, all right, hold it. All right, solve the problem. And then you have my permission to go over in the corner and panic. Okay? So she didn't say, don't panic. Mm-hmm. She said, hold it, solve the problem, then go panic.
Mm-hmm. So funny. But it's so interesting what you say about men crying, because my son is watching the World Cup. You know, he's gotten into soccer, and he's learning his flags and his countries and scores and numbers. It's wonderful. But he was very upset the other day that Spain lost.
Oh.
like very upset, was like crying, and I couldn't understand why. But then I noticed that, you know, all the soccer players on the field, like these grown men, Spanish men, were also crying. And so I used that as a teaching moment for him that, you know, men cry. Men, they lost the game, they wanted to win, and they're also crying. And this lasted at least 10, 15 minutes. But I think especially for people with boys, you know, showing them that men cry, you know, not being afraid, it's sort of the emotions are what are going to change people, right? It's sort of the emotions are what create the pain, the sadness, or the joy and the happiness. And so sadness and tears is an emotion. I think, you know, talking about choices, one of the things that I'm very big on teaching, and most parents, grandparents have never mentioned this word to their children, is intuition.
It is not taught.
It is not taught. Most parents have never mentioned the word to their kids. It is not taught in school. Oh. It's not taught in books. It's not taught anywhere. And so it was very important in the Giggles and Joy series to let children know that they have a part of themselves that they will have forever. It doesn't depend on mom or dad being around or a parent or a teacher or anything. But they have a self-directed ability to feel with their body, right? It's getting out of their mind, but feel. Their body is going to give them a yes or a no. They're going to perceive, am I feeling tight, contracted? Am I feeling anxious, or am I feeling relaxed? And to me, the sooner people teach their children about intuition, you know, intuition will let you know if you're going into the wrong job. Intuition will let you know if you're dating the wrong person, right? You talk about choices. And we make all these choices with the mind, and the mind is full of fear, and the mind can only use the past. And it's not our best decision maker, and it's certainly not the best decision maker for our children and what they're going to be using later. You want their intuition to be very loud. In our household, when I teach it to children, I call it the inner microphone.
Mm-hmm.
What's the inner microphone telling you? Turn it up. Turn it up to volume 10, because sometimes your intuition speaks quite softly because it's been beaten up so much. You've never listened to it.
Yeah.
So it's like, hello, Ariane, you know, don't buy this. And it's like my inner microphone. It's been, you know, my own personal and professional journey. I mean, I got engaged to the wrong guy, and my intuition was like, no, nine, no, in every language I know. And, my mind was like, yes, yes. You know, and I broke off that engagement. And same thing, I went into jobs I knew were wrong for me because my mind was like, yes, safe, good money, good title. So teach your kids about intuition. It's really such an important life skill.
Yeah. I remember writing down on a large piece of white construction paper, long rectangular piece, in a program I was in. It was a five-day intensive. And I wrote down on it, in cursive, interestingly enough, I will listen to, and then, in all caps, and follow the promptings of, and at that time, and even to this day, I refer to that as my friend. And I jokingly say to people now, when we talk about intuition, which is a huge subject on this program, just really big, and we talk about it, and I say, why are you bothering listening if you're not going to do what's asked of you? Now, I got into trouble with a guest once because they said, you know, there are some people that have lots of little voices going on in their heads. So I said, okay, all right, I understand that, I get that, but let's just say you got one. And it, because my personal belief is, from my standpoint, for me, my still small voice, my friend, is not going to put me in harm's way. Will I be challenged?
Yeah.
Yes.
But I don't even call it a voice, you know, because that's when it gets confusing.
Like, prompting.
Which one's my voice?
Yeah.
My body is talking to me.
Yes.
My stomach is tight.
Yes.
My eating is off. I'm going for sugar. I'm drinking more coffee. I'm drinking more alcohol. I'm sleeping too much. I'm not being kind. I'm being snappy. Like, my body is talking to me. Like, nothing to do with a voice.
Okay.
And the thing is, people are not in their bodies, right? So it's so important to get in the body so that you can realize your body is trying to get you on the right path, whether it's the parenting path, your professional path, your financial path. You know, we're so disconnected from our body. Like, someone was buying an apartment the other day, and They were, I could tell it was the wrong thing just by their body language. They were tight. They were going ahead and doing this because it was in the right neighborhood and it was by the school. And you know, I mean, I wish them well, but I asked them, I said, you know, what's your body telling you? You know, is this the right deal? Like, do you feel contracted, like tight, or do you feel open and relaxed? And most people don't even know what that means when I ask, what do you mean contracted?
You know, that's interesting that you...
Children definitely can feel, you know, is your body feeling tight or is it feeling relaxed?
And they're going to be honest about it.
Very much so. Yeah. You know, but you can say, you know, we're going to buy a gift for grandma. Should we buy her a book or should we buy her a potted plant? And then I'll say, you know, we should say, like, close your eyes. Which one feels, not what do you think, right?
Which one
feels like the one that grandma's going to like the most? And you get them into feeling the decision, as opposed to thinking the decision.
I remember interesting verbiage that I learned in one of these intensives when dealing with feelings versus thought. If you ask someone, how are you feeling? And the phrase comes out starting with, I feel like, they just went in their head.
Wow.
The moment they use the word like, they've just gone into their head. Now, when I was buying my very first house, we were shown the house on the 1st of September that year. And we actually closed on the 30th of September of that year. Unheard of in that market at that time, right? And we got a smoking deal. But the reason I bring this up is because, and this is going to be something I'm going to be talking about in my book that I'm still working on, is I told my wife at the time, I said, okay, we're looking at this house and here's what we need to focus on. What are we doing? What are we doing here? We're buying a house. And that means that no matter what comes up, the appraiser says this, that, the other thing, the insurance company says this, that, the loan, whatever, whoever says whatever, what are we doing? Are we fighting with the insurance company, the loan company, the broker, the title, the bop, 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 bop? No, we're buying a house. That's all we're doing. We're buying. Yes, we have to go through the details, but all we're doing is buying a house. And I stuck to that throughout the entire 30-day period. And I honestly believe on the last day, the day to close, I got a call from our realtor. And he says, I just picked up the documents and you don't have any homeowner's insurance. And I said, what? I says, I called blah, 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 and they were supposed to and blah, blah, blah. He says, okay, don't worry. I'll take care of it. You'll be all squared away. Closing is still this afternoon. I said, fine. So I called him and they dropped the ball. And it's like, okay, then I had to remind myself, no. This is not about the insurance company. You're buying a house, okay? Stay focused. You're buying a house. And I have to tell you that felt physically correct. That felt on target. That if I did that, it would all work. And it did. It was amazing.
And you chose, you know, your intention was I'm buying a house.
Yeah.
You know, coming back to parenting. Is your intention to raise a successful child? Is your intention for your child to be happy? Is your intention for your child to feel loved? Is your intention for your child to be super well-educated? Like, and it's not an either-or, but you know, it wasn't either a house or home insurance.
Right.
But one needs to be in first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's really my invitation to people with children or who have the responsibility of children. It's like, really, which one is in first place? In our household, spiritual, conscious child, you know, and of course that means something different to everyone, but that is in first place. It doesn't mean he won't also hopefully have a great education and be other things, but everything has to go through a primary intention and filter.
How is this message and how are these books being received by the people who you are now associating with as you go out and talk more about this and I'm sure go to bookstores and I don't know, maybe you're even having readings and so forth. What's the feedback that you're getting thus far?
The teachers and the schools love it because their intention is to be this and teach this and embody this, but this gives them a tool to start a conversation. So if I said to the teachers, you know, teach intuition, they're like, okay, how do I do that? If I give them a book that has some life skills where they can actually sort of, you know, start the conversation with a child, or I've done a lot of readings at schools, and I love doing them because I get given 5, 6, 7-year-olds and I can start off the, you know, having a bad day poem and say, who's ever had a bad day? And every hand grows up. And they love talking about this stuff. And what's amazing is you will hear why your child has a bad day, which most parents don't even know. I had a bad day because, you know, the cat didn't sleep in my room. Or I had a bad day because I wasn't allowed Nutella on my toast this morning. Like, I mean, it's so sweet and beautiful, and it actually informs their day. So the teachers and the school environment, you know, and the parents who've heard about it, you know, I mean, it's just been such an honor to be allowed into their homes, because this is an intimate thing to give, you know, parents, grandparents, teachers, something to actually assist in this journey. So I feel very, very honored to have been allowed. The book readings, when I've done them, they usually sell out because people don't only buy them for their kids, but people have godchildren, and then they have, you know, nieces and nephews, and then they have, you know, someone's got a baby shower and they never know what to give. So I've wanted to package them. And I mean, on Amazon, you can buy them as a gift set. So you can buy all three together. I think they are, and they're becoming more of a gift idea for people who, you know, want to give something more than just a toy to a child.
Yeah. And I realize that the subtitle Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids may, for some folks, throw up a red flag. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, this is coming from a particular philosophy, yeah, and religion, and I can't let my kids be exposed to that. And I sit here and I've gone through the book and the different passages, and here we're talking, let's just for sake of argument, talking about intuition. There isn't a single philosophy on the planet, as I like to call them, that doesn't talk about our intuition.
Yeah.
Not a single one. They may use different words, but they're still saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, too. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're not telling kids through these books how to. You're giving them permission to be.
Exactly. To be and to know what they already know. Like, I'm a believer that children come in pretty well packaged, and then we kind of
mess it up.
Take a few things out of them, you know, and say that's not what life is about. So, yeah. You know, I do get asked about the spiritual life lessons for kids, but to me it was important because I think this country and the world is going through a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
We are overly focused on everything but the spirit. You look at adults and the suicide rates, it is a spiritual health problem, right?
Yeah.
I know everyone says it's a mental health, but there is no taking care of the spirit. And these books are really about taking care of the spirit, the heart, the more invisible side, the side that is not going to get an A on a test, the side that is not going to be, you know, encouraged sort of in the culture or the outside world. And yet it is it's the engine, you know, it really is the engine. It's like, what's going on at the soul level?
Yeah.
They exist. And I've given these, and I've done readings for people of every type of religion. And they exist beautifully next to any religious text. They're more, you know, they're more Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, Dalai Lama. They're more sort of just beautiful souls that you would want to, you know, be and inspire in your own children.
Well, I'm excited by this, and I know that there would be those who would argue, well, yeah, you're supposed to get that from the church, synagogue, or mosque.
And you
it's like,
can.
Okay.
And they are there to help.
Yeah.
There is just a tool that, you know, of course read the prayers that are part of your family and your tradition, and we do the same thing. And of course, you know, if you want your child to have more of a universal appreciation of all religion, that's a beautiful thing to do, especially for what's going on the planet now, of just diversity and tolerance and understanding and acceptance. And I think it's a wonderful thing. And this is more of a sort of humble addition as opposed to anything that's supposed to replace.
Well, I'm thrilled at what you have put together, the three of you. I want to share one final piece that we've talked a little bit about throughout the program, and I think this kind of applies. I hope that you folks enjoy this. Who are you? Who are you? You are pure magic, pure delight. All is well and true and right. Who are you? You are a beautiful child, amazingly bright, filled with love, grace, and extraordinary light. Who are you? You are the one that is connected to everyone, who spreads joy and laughter and lots of fun. Who are you? You are pure potential, a miracle of creation. Anything is possible through your effort, love, and imagination. I hope that that is something that we can start to take a look at in ourselves, even as adults, is understanding who we are. And I have to say, Ariane, that I remember asking this question regarding one of my interviews and evolution, our evolutionary process as human beings. And I'm not talking Darwinism here either. But I asked, so do you see our evolutionary process as somewhere down the road, we're going to eventually understand, who we are? And they said, no. They said, what we're going to know is who we have always been, which I thought was an interesting distinction. But this goes to a poem that I also had recorded from another author some time ago, and I was introduced to it about 25 years ago. Tiberius, I think, was the gentleman's last name. And it had to do with the gods and man, and that the man was searching for a way to get to the gods, to the Godhead, right? And they were getting really worried, thinking, oh, we need to hide the secret. We need to hide it somewhere. How about at the top of a mountain? No, he'll find a way to climb that. How about in the depths of the sea? No, he'll find a way to get down there. How about up on this planet somewhere? No, he'll find a way to get there. I mean, they went through a litany of things. Finally, one of them chimed in. I know where we'll hide it. We'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I've heard that. It's lovely.
Yeah. And so what you're talking about, and you've said this a number of times throughout the program, is education from the neck down.
Yeah.
From the neck down. There's a term called kinesiology that I learned years ago, which is akin to this. And I remember when I was taught this, the woman who was teaching it to me said that when you use this, you could use it in the grocery store for picking, you know, whatever foods you're gathering. You could use it for circumstance. You could use it for a job search.
Yep.
Whatever. Your body isn't going to lie to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's extraordinary, extraordinary stuff.
Yep. No, I love that quote.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always checking in. How's your heart doing? You know?
Yeah.
How's your heart doing? And to me, you know, you see the preciousness of these tiny humans, and it's sort of, that's where I go. That's where I go. I you know, they're fragile. Those little hearts are so open. They're so undefended.
Yeah.
They don't have any walls. They don't have any boundaries. And so it's just, there's a real need to sort of appreciate sort of how special that is for the amount of time that we have them as children.
There's a phrase that saddens me when I hear it in regarding children. Our children are our future.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that is true, but can we let them be children while they're children? You know, because without that, again, without that opportunity for us and them to mold that clay in that first 6 years and even beyond, I often think if we could just do that, man, we would avoid the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Where they wouldn't have to go to therapy and encounter groups and try to work through all of the garbage that got heaped on them as they were growing up.
Yep.
And we could achieve greater things.
Yeah. And, you know, some of this, it really is simple. And it's not, parents don't need to do much. It's getting them outside more. It's getting them moving more so they can be in their body. It's getting them to, you know, not sit as much as they are. You know, I say this often, sitting does not equal learning.
No. Not at all.
And it's, you know, you start small. You start at the bottom of the pyramid, and your child responds so quickly to those things. It's breaking up routines. Like, children need routine, but they also need to learn that, you know, life is about change and things change. So again, mm-hmm. I encourage parents to go, you know, are you teaching your child about change, or are you protecting your child from change? Because you want your child to kind of go with that flow, which, by the way, they are pretty good at. It's the parents that don't want to change.
It's just amazing. I read a book years ago. It was mandatory reading by my employer at the time. It was a book called Who Moved the Cheese?
I read it
cover to cover, right? I go back to my boss and I say, look, I need you to understand that I don't have a problem with someone moving my cheese. Just tell me that they're moving it. Just tell me. Okay. and I suppose maybe that's still a part of the problem, and because you're not always told those kinds of things. But things change. Things change. Life changes. Locations change. I mean, my goodness, I wanted to get to the ocean in the worst way for the longest time. Never thought it would be Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. Never thought it would be here. Yeah. But here I am. And who knows where the next step is.
Yeah. But I think really believing that your children, you know, are fully capable, even though they seem to be in a particular stage of their life.
Yeah.
Seeing them already through that, right? And just seeing them through the tunnel, seeing them through whatever label they are attaching to themselves or you're doing for them. And, you know, also showing kids that you can change. You can change your job, you know? You can start exercising. Like, kids, I think there's a real need for all of us to be in integrity and what we're saying and teaching that we're first doing for ourselves. Like, you know, my biggest challenge with any parenting issue I encounter is that it's saying something about what's going on for me. Why am I challenged by this?
Yeah.
Why am I upset by this? What wound is it hitting in me? What is it reminding in my childhood, right? It's never about my child. And that's very challenging for people to hear. It's like, what's here for me? Mm-hmm. Why am I so upset about this? Why am I raising my voice? Why am I impatient? What's going on in my life that I'm being impatient with my child?
Yeah. It's not easy. It is challenging, but it is absolutely rewarding. My parents told me on numerous occasions in the last 20 years, and I would ask them point blank if they ever sacrificed anything for having six kids. And they said, absolutely not, because it's what we wanted to do. My mother tells me that I wanted a big family, she says. And that's what she got, you know. Although after the sixth one, she did tell my father, that's it. we're either getting twin beds or you're taking care of business.
God bless her.
But it's been extraordinary. And I have to say that every time my mother and I have a conversation, especially in person, and she uses the personal pronoun son, I'm not even sure how to take that anymore. I mean, it feels foreign and yet not so much. But it's the way that she says it, you know, that just gets right to the quick. And again, my father is the same way in our conversations, you know, and telling me how proud he is and da-da-da-da-da. And there's a part of me that used to feel guilty for coming from this place, this family, because everybody else that I met was in such turmoil over where they came from, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I don't know you at all, but I think everyone, some people have happy families, lots of siblings, some people have no siblings. I think we need to focus on what was good about six and what was good about one and what, I'm a big believer, because I've had to go through my own journey of sort of letting go of how I would have wanted things to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or how I would still want things to be different, because that is a huge energy drain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, I have a friend of mine, he has four girls, and at age 46, first time, you know, that they're making babies, they are saying, well, you're 46, no problem, no protection. And that she got pregnant at 46 with a fifth child. And of course they thought, oh, God is good, we're finally going to get our son. And they just had a fifth girl. You know, and I mean, it was a big adjustment. They have a 17-year-old and a newborn.
Oh, my.
And you know, it appears to be beautiful and wonderful, and it's not what they expected their life to be.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with, you know, I know lots of couples who don't have children, and it's not what they expected their life to be. And I think we really need to, like, give everyone permission to just be with the life that they currently have and not be obsessed about what's not or what I thought would have happened by the age of 30, 40, 50, because we never get to the this is what was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And it's just being with, like, you know, the immense gratitude and presence of what's current here, knowing that life will change and there's more blessings coming along.
Ariane Devon Boysen, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing so much time with us. And I would hope that should you choose to travel, I think it's, what, 5,000 miles from New York to Los Angeles?
I'm a big traveler, though. I'll come find you.
I would love to have
but
you in studio.
We're going to the beach, though. We're going to the
absolutely.
Beach. I heard that was important.
Absolutely. We actually can record our interview at the beach. I'll take my digital recorder and a couple of microphones, and we'll sit there under an umbrella and just let the surf roll in and talk about this stuff and continue to hopefully enlighten and educate people from the neck down. So I look forward to that opportunity. And before I do let you go, a reminder to our listeners that we're talking, of course, about Giggles and Joy. And this is a series, Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids. More books are coming. Three are out right now. Being You, Giggles and Joy, and You Are Loved. And before I let you go, a final three questions for you, but a reminder to our listeners that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more to this interview, a lot more. You're going to want to go to either SoundCloud or iTunes or go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and you can listen to the entire interview because we just go on and on and on. Don't want it to end sometimes. But first question to you, who is Ariane de Bonvoisin?
I am an instrument for the divine to serve my fellow beings, and I'm having a lot of fun along the way.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I would like to see our tiny humans be themselves, be happy, enjoy this life on this beautiful planet, and to help anyone who has the privilege and responsibility of being around them to do the same.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to to know where I have come from and to realize that we are all divine and that everything is in divine order.
Ariane de Bonvoisin, I thank you so much for joining us on the program today. It's just been a real pleasure and a treat for me to talk to you about these things, and we will discuss following the interview this other matter that we talked about briefly at the front end, because it would be so exciting to be a part of that. And again, thank you again. By the way, how do people get in touch with you? What's the web address?
So the Giggles and Joy is easy, gigglesandjoy.com. And then the best place for me is Ariane, that's spelled A-R-I-A-N-E, studio.com.
Oh, much
Ariane
easier.
Studio.com. Yeah, not my super long last
name. I was going to say, I'm glad you didn't, because that would be.
Yeah, no, I had to shorten that. It wasn't
very good.
Working.
Ariane Studio.
Ariane Studio, and, you know, whether it's coaching or just getting in touch or asking me a question or any other books I've written, or I'd be more than happy, and I do respond to emails.
And of course, we didn't really get into other books that you have written, which we will the next time. We will have you back on the program. Mm-hmm. I would love to talk further about what you're doing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This was a real, real honor.
Thank
you. I loved all your questions.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.